very eccentric. A crease formed between my brows. Sounds vaguely familiar, but Father changes staff so often it's hard to keep everyone straight. I spread brie and fig preserves across toast points and handed it to Nathaniel, before repeating the process for myself. Each time I was certain I'd resolved an important item to my satisfaction, it became clear it wasn't as it seemed. I wished to find one blasted clue that could point me in a fruitful direction. It'd be even better if murderers, psychopaths, and villains simply held a sign up for inquiring minds to spot easily. It bothered me such a savage could be walking amongst us. Nathaniel waved a hand in front of my face.
Have you heard anything I've said?
Sorry? I blinked as if emerging from a daydream, one that didn't involve murders and dying old men. My brother sighed again.
I said Father fired him shortly after Mother's...
Death was what he didn't want to say. Neither one of us liked saying it out loud. The wound's still too raw to cope with, even after 5 years. I squeezed his hand, letting him know I understood.
Anyway, he was dismissed abruptly. I never knew why, Nathaniel said, shrugging. You know how Father can be at times, though. Mr. Dunlop used to teach me chess when no one needed him.
My brother smiled, the pleasant memory lighting his whole mood.
Truthfully, I've stayed in touch with him. He couldn't continue as a coachman after being turned out by Father without a proper reference. I've met him a few times to play chess, wagering money and purposely losing, just to help him out some. His circumstances are sadly reduced, and I cannot help feeling responsible somehow. These days he works the deck on the Mary Sea.
Another life condemned to hard times thanks to Lord Edmund Wadsworth and his own eccentricities, I said. I wondered what the coachman could have possibly done to end up a lowly deckhand. His only crime was probably being too kind to my brother. It seemed when Father dismissed servants, their lives were never the same in the very worst of ways. At least Alistair was still breathing. Miss Nichols would never inhale the unwholesome air of the Thames again. Misinterpreting my silence, Nathaniel wrapped an arm around my shoulder, pulling me into a comforting embrace.
I'm sure he's happy enough, little sister. Some men live for the kind of freedom that comes with swabbing the decks of a great ship and hauling cargo chests. No responsibilities. No need to worry about teas and cigar rooms, white tie versus black tie, and all that upper-class nonsense. The rush of wind through their hair.
He smiled wistfully.
It's a noble life.
You speak as if you'd like to throw away your good name and swab the decks yourself. Nathaniel would make a terrible sailor, and we both knew it. He might entertain the notion of leaving behind the finer things in life for freedom, but he cherished his imported brandy and French wine too much. Giving all that up for cheap ale in dank public houses wouldn't suit him in the slightest. I smiled just picturing him sliding up to a bar, ordering something as common as a pint, his hair in complete disarray. Before he teased me back, our coachman approached, bending to whisper something in my brother's ear. Nathaniel nodded, then stood, brushing down the front of his tailored suit.
Afraid we must end our lunch early. Word has come that Aunt Amelia and Cousin Liza have arrived. I assume you're in no hurry to get on with your proper lady duties. Will you be all right if I leave you here to finish your luncheon?
I hardly need a babysitter, I said. But you're right. I'd like a little time to enjoy my remaining freedom. I grinned, knowing full well that if Nathaniel had it his way, aside from my maid and the footman who were present, I'd have a bodyguard, governess, nurse, and any other attendant he could think of watching out for me.
Go, I said, shooing him away.
He stood there tapping his sides, uncertain. I'll be fine. I'm going to enjoy the fresh air for a bit, then I'll head home. I crossed my heart. I assure you I won't be sitting down to tea with any brutal killers between now and supper. Stop looking so worried. A smile warred with a frown, but eventually beat it out. His lips twitched.
Your assurances somehow leave me feeling anything but comforted.
He tipped his hat.
Until this evening. Oh,
he paused, eyeing my clothing.
Might want to change into something a bit more... suitable for Aunt Amelia's tastes?
I waved goodbye, uncrossing my fingers from behind my back once he'd disappeared from view. I'd most certainly head home and change out of my riding habit and into a new dress. That was after I made a detour to the docks to speak with the mysterious Alistair Dunlop and sort out secrets he might be harbouring on the Mary Sea.
Honestly, I don't know why you insisted on bringing that wretched beast with us, I complained to Thomas as the leash nearly tripped me for the third time. It's hard enough manoeuvring around in these cursed heels without the added obstacle of having my limbs tied together every 5 seconds by a nearsighted dog.
Thomas eyed the silver buttons lining the front of my black riding habit, coaxing a scowl from me. His look implied my choice of attire, including a pair of matching breeches, should make for an easier time walking about.
"I'd like to see you carry on with a corset digging its bones into your ribcage," I said, returning the favour and eyeing his clothing. "And manage a skirt, still covering most of your breeches and whipping around your thighs in this wind."
"If you'd like to see me out of my breeches, simply ask Wadsworth. I'm more than happy to accommodate you on that front."
Scoundrel!
He'd supposedly been taking the lop-eared, brown-and-white mongrel for a walk around the lake when he happened upon my picnic, an excuse I'd found highly suspect. Especially when he'd happened to run into me while John, the footman, was repacking the hamper. Thomas had snatched a few pieces of braised pork for his canine companion to snack on. I sent the empty hamper home, along with John and my maid, both of whom looked only too pleased to be escaping one of my schemes. When I pointed out the unlikelihood of the coincidence, Thomas stated it was serendipity and to be thankful for his gentlemanly company while parading around in front of pirates and ruffians. He should be thankful I didn't accidentally stab him with my hatpin, though I was secretly pleased he'd sought me out. The cobbled street was wide, yet awkward to navigate with so much commotion going on. Men hoisted chests off the side of large ships, the wooden boxes dangling precariously from ropes above their heads. Barrels of wine were rolled into warehouses, along with large metal bins of tobacco. Women shouted out specials on what they were selling a few streets over, everything from baked goods to mending torn sails. We crossed from one basin into another, separating the next set of ships. Shop after shop was dedicated to maritime adventures, boasting in the windows golden compasses, sextants, chronometers, and all other ship-themed paraphernalia one could desire. I watched a custom house officer check cargo coming off the nearest vessel, the brass buttons on his jacket winking in the afternoon sun. He smiled, tipping his cap as I neared, causing my cheeks to pink.
"Come now," Thomas snorted. "He's not nearly as handsome as I."
"Thomas," I hissed, jabbing him with my elbow.
He feigned injury, but I could tell he was pleased my attention had been restored to him. Stores gave way to shabby houses piled together like nesting rats. Refuse stunk up the gutters in this neighbourhood, mixing with the scent of dead fish washing ashore. Thank goodness for the strong breeze coming in off the water, whipping my onyx locks and testing the fit of my velvet hat.
"Toby,"
he said, responding to a question I didn't ask, while observing the cacophony going on around us.
"He's more intelligent than half the police force at Scotland Yard, Wadsworth. You should be kissing the very ground I walk upon for bringing such a fine animal. Or perhaps you could just kiss my cheek. Give the officers and ruffians a bit of a thrill."
Ignoring his attempt at improper flirting, I watched the dog waddle down the road and onto the dock, amazed it hadn't walked itself right off the piers. It was the clumsiest animal I'd ever encountered. I much preferred cats and their insatiable curiosity.
"Is Toby your family's dog, then?"
Thomas counted off boats, reading names under his breath as we made our way down to the Mary Sea.
"I borrowed him."
He stopped in front of a new basin of ships, the forest of masts looming high above our heads, swaying and creaking with the rolling tide. This section was noisier. I could hardly keep a thought in my head without it turning into some sailor's boisterous tune. Nathaniel would be horrified if he knew I was hearing such vile language, making it all the more appealing somehow. Goats bleated,
and exotic birds cawed from the deck of one ship, encouraging me to crane my neck until I caught a glimpse of brightly coloured macaw feathers flapping against a cage. On the very same boat, an enormous elephant trumpeted, stomping its feet as a slew of deckhands tried unloading it. Names on the crates suggested they were part of the travelling circus arriving in town. Up until the last few weeks, I'd been looking forward to attending the event with my brother. The Human Curiosities attractions were world-famous and boasted of several must-see-to-believe acts. "I've heard rumours of a man who swallows fire," I said to Thomas as we passed the ship, "and another who's got four legs, if such things are to be believed."
"You don't say," he said. "Personally, I'd rather stay in, reading."
Queen Victoria was a great fan of the circus and would make an appearance on opening night. Everyone who thought themselves important, and some who actually were, would be in attendance. "Look," I pointed to the ship we'd been seeking. "There it is, the Mary C."
"Stay close, Wadsworth," he said. "I don't care for the look of these fellows."
I peered up at Thomas, a subtle warmth spreading through my limbs. "Be careful, Mr. Cresswell. Someone might think you're beginning to care for me." He glanced in my direction, drawing his brows together as if I'd said something particularly strange.
"Then I should like to meet that person. They'd be quite astute."
Without uttering another word, he walked forward, leaving me gaping after him a moment, stunned. What a horrid liar he was! I gathered myself and hurried after him. The ship was the size of a small, man-made island of steel, grey and desolate as a normal London day. It was easily twice the length of every other ship at dock, and the crew looked twice as mean. As we approached the captain, a burly man with black eyes and broken teeth, docile-seeming Toby took on the ferocity of a dire wolf, baring his canines and growling loud enough to be intimidating. The captain took a look at the dog, then passed a quick glance over us.
"This ain't no place for a young lady. Move along."
I had half a mind to bare my teeth as Toby had. It was working wonders for him. But smiled sweetly, showing just the right amount of my pearly whites. Aunt Amelia always said men could be charmed easily. "I'm looking for an Alistair Dunlop. We were told he's under your employ." The captain, vile creature he was, spit into the water, eyeing me suspiciously.
"What's it to you?"
Thomas tensed beside me, his hand flexing at his side. I smiled again, this time staring purposely at a point over the captain's shoulder. I tried my aunt's cunning and polite way. Now it was time to do things in my own manner. "I'd hate to make a scene and call that charming custom house officer over here," I said. "Really, one shouldn't operate such an important ship without the proper documentation for all their cargo. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Cresswell?"
"Certainly,"
Thomas said, letting Toby's leash go slack. The captain took an unsteady step away from the growling mutt.
"Not to mention it'd be catastrophic if men hiring such a ship discovered part of their cargo was being sold on the side. Doesn't your family know most of the aristocracy in Europe, Miss Wadsworth?"
"Indeed," I confirmed, while the captain visibly squirmed in his boots. "We do. You come from equally good stock, don't you, Mr. Cresswell?"
"Indeed," he answered, smiling. "I do."
A look of pure hatred crossed the captain's face. Apparently he wasn't someone who enjoyed being bested by a clever-mouthed boy and girl. The captain grunted.
"He's making a delivery at the Jolly Jack. Should be unloading round in the alley."
Chapter 11. Something Wicked. Jolly Jack Public House, London, 13th September, 1888. Thanks to poor directions given by the unpleasant captain, we wandered down a few dead-end streets before finding ourselves at the disreputable but lively public house. A painted wooden sign depicting a grinning white skull on a black flag hung over the door. Inside, men sat hunched over tankards, swigging pints and wiping their mouths with torn sleeves, while women slunk around like wild cats on the prowl. Giving up any pretense of fitting in, I strode through the room with my head held high, stares and whispers rolling in my wake.
Most highborn women didn't roam around in all-black riding ensembles with leather boots and gloves. While wearing riding habits when one wasn't riding was slowly coming into fashion, the color of my attire and material was what set me apart. I hoped I inspired a sense of unease, even if it was fleeting. Once we reached the back alley, we were met with nothing but the sounds of our own beating hearts and Toby's panting. I removed my gloves and rubbed behind his furry ears. "Do you see him?" I asked, taking quick stock of our surroundings. An open crate sat on top of several others that must have been unloaded recently, but there was no one here. I walked over to the wooden box and glanced inside. It was filled with rows of glasses. I imagined rowdy patrons broke a lot of them once they were well into their cups. Not exactly what I expected the captain to be selling on the black market, but profitable for him nonetheless. Thomas knit his brows, staring at the crate. "Seems a bit odd that Mr. Dunlop would leave these goods unattended." "Perhaps he's inside." Without waiting for his response, I turned on my heel and marched back into the noisy pub. I leaned over the scored wooden bar, practically shouting to get the barkeep's attention. The rotund woman wiped her hands on a dirty dish towel, running her gaze over me as if I were a complete waste of time. So much for fear-inspiring ensembles. Might as well have dressed in my Sunday best and left the leather for butchers.
"Short of bourbon, miss,"
she sneered, wiping out a pilsner glass with the rag, filling it with dark amber liquid, and sliding it to a burly man at the end of the bar. I watched him take a deep pull of the drink. I couldn't control my lip from curling at his ability to ignore the cesspool of filth that had been wiped all around the glass. God only knew what kind of disease he was potentially being exposed to. I longed to take the rag back to Uncle's laboratory and run a series of tests on it. The group of men closest laughed, pulling me into the present. I gripped my fist, digging my nails into my palms for crescent-shaped serenity.
"Where's the man who's delivering the glasses?"
"He wasn't out back, and his employer has a message for him." I leaned closer, dropping my voice to a stage whisper. "I suspect it has something to do with the custom house officer who boarded his ship with a contingent of men looking for stolen goods. They may be heading here as we speak." I let my suggestion hang in the air. Her eyes went wide in her ruddy cheeks. I kept my expression neutral, though I was quite pleased the way the lie came so naturally, and at the reaction it fostered in a woman who looked scarier than some of the sea-wrecked men. Swallowing audibly, she pointed toward the door to the alley. "He's just outside." Producing a large knife from under the counter, she hacked a fish apart on a wooden carving board. "I'll gut him next time I see him. You tell him next time he see Mary, he better run." That explained the name of the ship. She waved the knife in the air, hollering at an impatient patron holding his empty mug in her line of sight.
"Keep swinging that at me face and it won't be the only thing I chop off, Billy."
I slipped out the door again, shaking my head at Thomas before quickly filling him in. Thomas knelt beside a crate, sticking his finger in something wet and rubbing it between his thumb and forefinger. I gulped down a rising sense of panic when I noticed what he'd found. Perhaps he broke a glass and went to get a bandage. Thomas didn't dignify that with an answer. He stood, leading Toby close to the blood.
"Toby, find,"
he gently commanded the animal. I watched in amazement as the dog obediently sniffed around until he picked up the scent. His tail wagged so hard, I thought he'd take off like a bird, flying through the cross streets and alleyways. Thomas let the leash go, and we trotted behind the dog while he ran down one alley, then the next. We'd gone only about 5 streets over when I saw a heap of tattered clothing propped against an abandoned building. A man was sitting with his legs outstretched, his chin resting on his chest, his eyes closed peacefully. His hand dripped spots of blood onto his shirt. I breathed a sigh of relief. A miserable drunk with a small cut was something I could deal with. Toby stopped a few feet from the man, growling low in his throat.
"Audrey Rose, wait!"
Thomas grabbed for my coat sleeve, but I maneuvered out of reach. I thought it odd Thomas finally used my Christian name, but didn't stop to ponder it or his worried tone. It was getting late in the day, Nathaniel would be expecting me for supper shortly, and I didn't want to explain why I was only just arriving home after our lunch at the park. Walking right up to the indisposed man, I cleared my throat. He didn't move. I tried again, a bit louder this time, with the same results. Blasted sailors and their love of all things liquid. I heard Thomas saying something behind me, but ignored him, bending to tap the man's shoulder. Honestly, I didn't appreciate all the males in my life thinking me incapable. I'd show every one of them I could handle anything they could, possibly even better. I tapped him a bit more. "Excuse me, sir, are you?" I'd barely touched him when his head swung back, revealing a sinister crimson smile slashed across his neck. It wasn't his hand that was cut after all. Someone screamed. Perhaps it was me, though it would have made me happier if it were Thomas Blasted Cresswell. Thomas pulled me back, rocking me gently in his arms, and I didn't even care that it was vastly inappropriate.
"Divorce yourself from emotions, Audrey Rose. See it like an equation that needs solving. That's all it is now. It's going to be all right."
When I looked at my hands, I knew that was a horrible lie. Everything was most certainly not okay, and this was no mathematical equation. My hands were covered in sticky blood. I frantically wiped them off on my bodice, but it was no use. Blood stained my fingers in a crimson accusation. Somehow, some way, I was responsible for this man's death. Nathaniel sat with his arms crossed tightly over his chest, looking more serious than a man facing a firing squad. When the detective inspector showed up on our doorstep with me covered in blood and shivering beneath a horse blanket, he'd gone deathly pale. My aunt had nearly fainted herself when she'd seen me, and ushered her daughter into their rooms, promising a thorough discussion on proper behavior once I was decent. Something else to look forward to. Each time I closed my eyes, the scene replayed in my mind. The horrid, gaping smile taunting me. I'd heard police mention his neck was almost severed completely. A few tendons and ligaments were barely saving him from decapitation, a fact I was well aware of. I shivered. There was something infinitely worse about touching a still warm, dead person, as opposed to cutting open the cold ones in Uncle's laboratory.
"Here, drink this."
Nathaniel pressed a hot cup of tea into my hands. I hadn't seen him cross the room. I stared at the steam rising off the pale, almost golden liquid. It was impossible, but I swear I could have almost heard the last few strained beats of the man's heart as he bled out in front of me. Thomas assured me, even if we'd arrived moments after the attack, he'd likely have died almost instantly. There was an agonizing feeling deep inside of me, wondering if I'd held a cloth to his wound instead of knocking his head askance, if it could have saved his life. What kind of girl was so accustomed to blood she paid it no mind? A terrible one.
"If there's anything else we can do, detective,"
Nathaniel said, ushering the man from the drawing room. I'd forgotten he was even there. I heard snippets of conversation as they made their way to the front door. An identification card was found in the man's pocket, confirming my worst fears. Someone got to Mr. Dunlop before I could question him. Guilt wrapped itself so tightly around me I could scarcely breathe. How many men needed to die before I discovered the truth? I sipped the fragrant tea, letting the warmth slide down my throat all the way into my gullet, heating me from the inside out. I knew nothing regarding Mr. Dunlop and his personal life, so I hadn't the slightest clue who would wish him dead. Was it someone he worked with? The whole crew of the Mary C. certainly appeared capable of murder, but looks had a troubling way of being deceiving. Mother used to read stories from books she'd brought from Grandmama's. At first I'd turned my nose up at them, thinking nothing good could come from such battered covers. I'd been snobbish and wrong. The words written between those crinkled pages were magical, like a fairy princess hiding amongst paupers. Mother taught me judging something from its outward appearance was silly, a lesson I tried remembering often. Recalling the way I'd curl up in her lap brought on a new wave of sadness.
How much death and destruction must one girl go through in a lifetime?
As the door opened and closed, I blinked tears back, angry with myself for not being tougher.
Nathaniel sank into the high-backed chair across from me, leaning over to look me in the eyes. I half expected him to scold me for venturing out, being reckless as I was prone to be. Instead, he smiled.
You're the bravest person I know, little sister.
I couldn't stop myself from snorting. I was a sniffling, teary mess, hardly the mark of bravery.
Thomas had held me the entire carriage ride home, just so I wouldn't break apart. I'd siphoned his strength, and missed it terribly now.
Nathaniel shook his head, easily reading my thoughts.
Well, I hope not the one regarding Thomas with his arms around me.
Half the men in Father's circle wouldn't have dared to question men who work the docks, he said. It takes an extraordinary amount of courage to do what you did.
He dropped his gaze.
My only regret with your outing today is the horror of seeing that man with his... I'm truly sorry you were the one to find him.
I held a hand up to stall him. I didn't want to think about finding poor Mr. Dunlop anymore. I lifted my chin, chasing the would-be tears away.
Thank you. I stood, setting my teacup down on the table, and hugged my arms to my chest. I needed to get out of this room and clear my head.
Reaching down to gather my skirts, I realized I was still dressed in my blood-smeared riding habit and breeches. Perhaps the news of my grisly discovery wasn't the only thing that had made my aunt nearly faint. First thing I needed to do was change into clean clothing. Even the strongest soldier in the Queen's army wouldn't run around in battered trousers, I assured myself.
Nathaniel got up from his own seat.
Where are you going?
I smiled. To change. Then I'm calling on Thomas. There are things I need to discuss with him, and I'm afraid they cannot wait until morning.
Nathaniel opened his mouth, ready to argue, but stopped himself.
I'd just discovered a mutilated man in an alley on the docks. Calling on Mr. Thomas Cresswell late in the afternoon was the least of his worries.
He glanced at the clock, then back at me.
I'm leaving shortly myself. I probably won't be home until after you're already asleep. Please, for my sake, try to get home before it gets dark out. We've both had enough excitement for one evening. Were I to have another fright like it, I might end up dying on the spot.
As we stepped into the hallway, I really looked at my brother. Stress was still getting the better of him. Little lines were deepening around his eyes, exhaustion taking an even greater toll on him than it had a few nights ago. I felt horrible adding to his already full plate. He was always busy studying, and now with Father gone, he was tending to the house, and me, all while some murderer was running around slaughtering women. I wasn't making his job any easier by sneaking out at night and finding dead men in the afternoon. I twisted Mother's ring around my finger one way and then the next.
How would you feel if I asked Thomas to come by here for a bit instead?
I knew it was an outrageous question, since he wouldn't be home to chaperone us, but figured it might ease his mind, knowing I wouldn't be leaving the premises after all. Plus, Aunt Amelia and Liza were in the house. It wasn't as if I'd be all alone with him.
Audrey Rose, I'm not certain about that.
He stared at me for a painfully long few seconds, struggling with what was socially proper and what would make him inevitably feel better. He pulled his favorite comb out, running it through his hair, then placed it back in his jacket pocket before finally answering.
Very well. I'll telephone him on my way out. You're not to close any doors.
He took a deep breath and glanced down the hall.
Please keep to the dining room and parlor. Be sure to stay a decent length apart. Last thing we need are rumors circulating. Father will be home in less than 2 weeks. He'll slay us both if your reputation is tarnished. Especially since he's...
Nathaniel snapped his mouth shut and turned.
He wasn't getting away with keeping secrets that easily. I charged after him and grabbed his sleeve, tugging him back around.
Especially since he's what? I demanded.
What aren't you telling me, Nathaniel? Has he been back in London? Is he still unwell?
My brother looked as if he'd rather be speaking with the detective inspector again, and an awful feeling bubbled up my throat. I shook his arm, my expression pleading, he sighed. It never took long for him to give in to his only sibling, and I felt only slightly terrible for exploiting that weakness.
Your father has been receiving callers in both town and country, Aunt Amelia said, emerging, it seemed, from out of thin air. She looked like a feminine version of my father and uncle, tall, fair and beautiful. One would never imagine she was in her early 40s. Aunt Amelia embodied the very essence of what a woman should strive to be at all times. Everything from her neatly styled hair to her silk-adorned feet was immaculate and delicate. Even the disapproving, pinched expression on her face was royal-looking. Though after tonight's debauchery, and the rumours surely following, I'm not sure he'll have much success. If I didn't know any better, I'd assume you were trying to ruin all of your prospects.
I stared from my aunt to my brother.
You said he hadn't left Bath at all.
A young man's been writing to Father for weeks now. From what I've gathered, his family is very well connected politically.
Nathaniel straightened his suit.
The merging of our families would make sense. Father returned to London to meet with him, but it was only for a day.
It was as if the ground had split open in a giant yawn that swallowed me whole. I couldn't stop thinking about Father secretly meeting potential husbands while he was supposed to be recuperating.
But I haven't even come out in society yet, I said. I've got an entire year before worrying about balls and parties. How am I supposed to deal with this, on top of working for Uncle and the murders going on in Whitechapel? I cannot possibly entertain the notion of anyone courting me.
Except for possibly one boy with mischief in his soul. Then a thought struck. Thomas's family was connected politically, as far as I knew, and we had been interacting for weeks. Could his flirtations be real then?
Aunt Amelia crossed herself. It will be a miracle if they remain interested in that merger now. You've got some serious mending to attend to. I'm organizing a tea for tomorrow afternoon. It'll do you a world of good, interacting with girls your age who are interested in decent things. There'll be no more childish games or discussions of murder. Certainly no working for your uncle and his unnatural science. If your father learns of this, he'll relapse. Have I made myself perfectly clear? I stared at my brother for assistance, but he was preoccupied. But... Nathaniel checked the clock in the hallway, then gave me a sympathetic look.
Try not to dwell on it now. I'm sure it'll all work out fine. I really must be off. I was supposed to meet the head barrister half an hour ago.
Without waiting for my response, my brother tipped his hat to Aunt Amelia and me, then walked briskly down the hallway and out the front door, leaving me alone to deal with the aftermath of the bomb he'd just dropped on me. Why was Father taking a sudden interest in marrying me off? And who was the mystery man writing about me? If it wasn't Thomas, then who was it? An uncomfortable feeling slithered like snakes through my gut. I didn't like this turn of events one bit, and would do everything in my power to stall any courting. I clenched my fists.
Arranged marriages have gone out of fashion, I stated,
hoping to appeal to my aunt's vanity.
People would surely gossip about it.
First things first, Aunt Amelia said, clapping her hands and ignoring me altogether. Time to get rid of those disgusting, blood-soaked garments. Then we'll address the matter of your hair.
She scrunched her nose as if she were observing a rodent rummaging through rubbish. I cringed. My hair had been the last thing on my mind after finding a man dead.
Honestly, Audrey Rose, you're far too pretty and too old to be running around like a tomboy, she said. Bring your needle and thread down after your bath. It's high time we worked on your hope chest.
Chapter 12 Family Ties. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 13th September, 1888. Nearly 2 hours and several dainty ahems of approval later, my aunt finally retired to bed, satisfied she'd sewn inappropriateness from me, one stitch at a time. It now didn't seem to bother her I'd found a murdered man, so long as I'd created pretty violets and swirling vines to make up for breaking social taboos. She'd also insisted on having my newest maid add a bit more powder and polish
to my after-bath routine. When I'd argued that it was unnecessary, I could do fine on my own. She crossed herself and refilled her wine, instructing the maid to attend to my beauty needs each day from there on out. I resisted the urge to wipe the excess coal from my eyes, especially when Thomas kept tossing smug glances my way. I enjoyed applying makeup as any other girl my age would, only I did so with a lighter hand.
Police say a gear was used to slash his throat open.
Thomas fidgeted in his seat in our drawing room. I refused to let him smoke in the house, and he was more twitchy than usual while filling me in on the investigation. He slid one of Uncle's medical journals over to me, his fingers lingering a bit near mine, before he fiddled with his own notebook.
"How on earth did someone do that much damage with a simple gear?"
I asked, moving around in my own chair with discomfort. It was strange having Thomas in my home without supervision, even though we'd spent time roaming London and Reading by ourselves, and my aunt and cousin were only a few floors above us. I figured once we started discussing the murder, things would become less awkward, but that was proving to be another falsehood.
"Turning something like that into a weapon isn't hard."
He lifted his teacup, but didn't sip, before setting it down again, his gaze snagging on mine.
"It's made of metal and has sharp ends. Any madman or drunk can manage killing someone with it. I myself have sharpened quite a few."
I did not have the mental energy to ask why he had experience or need to sharpen gears. Letting that slide, I kept my focus on the case, drumming my fingers along the journal. At the first two murders, there were gears. It's a bit too much of a coincidence to be unrelated to our own investigation. Wouldn't you agree?
"Dear Wadsworth, your association with me is growing more beneficial by the hour. Your intelligence is quite attractive,"
Thomas said, raising his brows suggestively and taking in my newly plaited hair.
"Let's have some wine and dance inappropriately. You've already dressed the part for me. Let's take advantage."
He offered his hand, palm up, a wicked grin set upon his face.
"Thomas, please!"
I batted his hand away, blushing furiously. Dancing with Thomas, alone, without a chaperone, would be scandalous, and was far too tempting. Plus, it wouldn't solve this mystery any faster, I reasoned. Aunt Amelia would perish on the spot if she walked in on such impropriety.
Her untimely end would excuse you from any more embroidery lessons, would it not? Perhaps we should skip the dancing and passionately embrace instead.
Thomas! I chided.
I told myself the sooner we discovered who the murderer was, the sooner I'd be rid of Thomas Cresswell and his devious ways.
We'd be kissing in back alleys before I knew it.
Then my reputation would truly be in the gutter. I didn't appreciate the twinge of disappointment I felt at the thought of not spending as much time with him.
"Very well, then."
Thomas leaned back, sighing.
"I believe someone was spying on us in the shipyard. They must have overheard us talking about Mr. Dunlop. It's the only logical conclusion that works. If we can identify him, I'm positive we'll have found our murderer."
"And if I had a crown, I'd be queen," I said, unable to stop myself.
"Honestly, Thomas, how ridiculous a statement. If.
We need something a bit more secure than a simple if we're to stop a vicious murderer."
The irony of my last statement was not lost on Thomas. A slow smile crept across his mouth as he leaned forward, our faces dangerously close.
"If I purchased a crown, would you run round Buckingham Palace in nothing but your petticoats, demanding the guards let you through?"
"Be serious,"
I admonished him, but not before laughing at the absurdity of the image.
"Can you picture such a thing? I'd be thrown into the Tower, and they'd have the key tossed in the Thames for good measure. Good riddance indeed."
"Fear not, I'd find ways of springing you from your Tower prison, fair lady."
I shook my head.
"Wonderful. You'll end up in the next cell, dooming us both."
Thomas laughed heartily for a few beats, his gaze straying to my lips and staying there. I swallowed, suddenly remembering we were alone, and I couldn't find one good reason why I shouldn't kiss him. I was already trouble in society's eyes. Might as well embrace my role and have a bit of adventure in the process.
Cousin Liza would demand every last detail,
A bit of gossip might be fun. Checking my reaction, he slowly closed the distance between us, my pulse quickening as his expression shifted to a sweet unguardedness. Yes, I thought. This was right. I couldn't think of a more perfect first kiss. A clattering noise from the kitchen downstairs broke the spell. He abruptly sat straighter in his chair, flipping the notebook open with intense interest. The temperature in the room chilled at least 20 degrees. I blinked at how quickly he shut himself off. I'd half a mind to have a fire made in here, not that it'd help his frigid demeanor. Straightening my shoulders, I collected my thoughts. Well, then, I could be just as fickle as Thomas, if that's how he wanted our association to be. We needn't laugh, or even be friends. In fact, I should never have warmed to him to begin with. I couldn't believe how close I'd been to kissing him. Deplorable beast that he was. Though, if I were truly being honest with myself, I would admit it was nice having an acquaintance as abnormal in society's eyes as I was. Father hadn't allowed friends into our home while we were growing up, what with influenzas and potential pox contaminations. So I'd never had a best friend before, and missed out on those sorts of relationships. Even with all Father's efforts, disease still found its way into our home. He hadn't realized how difficult it would make things once I was old enough to accept my own invitations for tea. Now I needed my aunt and cousin to come in and make friends for me. I couldn't be vexed with Father, though. He did the best he could, even when his best was detrimental. "I'll take that!" I snatched another journal from Thomas's side of the table. It seemed he'd grabbed nearly all of Uncle's journals before arriving here, and was hoarding them, along with his manners. He didn't bother lifting his head from his own work. Of all the... I set my jaw and reread the same few sentences, forcing my brain to find a connection between the victims. Two prostitutes, Miss Smith, and a coachman-turned-sailor, most of whom had a connection to Father, I realized with a start. The only person who couldn't be traced to him was Miss Annie Chapman, and she'd been slain in the most brutal manner. Everything pointed to the fact that Miss Chapman didn't know her killer, but the others likely did. I swallowed hard, knowing there was something we needed to do immediately. "Excuse me," I stood, gathering my skirts like silent witnesses, and headed out the door without waiting for Thomas to stand. If he wanted to treat me so coolly, then I'd show him the same lack of respect. I needed no man to empower me. I had my father to thank for that much. His absence in most everyday things had prepared me well enough to stand on my own. Walking swiftly down the hallway, I paused, listening to sounds of voices drifting up from ornate metal vents in the floor. Once I reached my father's study, I halted to the sound of someone knocking at the front door. Drat! I crept back down the hall and slipped into the well-lit drawing room while the first footman greeted the caller. Last thing I needed was to get caught rummaging through Father's things. But suddenly recalling something Thornley mentioned had my mind spinning with new questions. Thomas continued to pore over his notes. I paid him little attention, straining to hear who was calling on us at this hour. Footsteps approached, and I pretended to lose myself in reading. The first footman entered the room, waiting for my acknowledgement. I looked up, eyes innocent and wide. "Yes, Kane?"
"There's a Mr. Alberts here to see you, Miss Audrey Rose. Says he works for your uncle and brings an urgent message. He apologizes for the late hour. Shall I send him away?"
I shook my head. It's not like Uncle to send someone over unless it's important.
Especially if Father intercepted any correspondence he'd want to keep private.
Something must have happened. Perhaps he found a link to the crimes and couldn't wait until morning. Or maybe he'd discovered our murderer's identity.
Anticipation raced through my core, erasing all else from my thoughts. "Send him in straight away, please."
The footman disappeared, emerging again with my uncle's servant in tow. The man gripped a worn derby hat, nervously twisting the brim round and round, looking as if he'd just encountered something awful. My heart turned to lead, dully thudding in my chest. Perhaps he was simply afraid of encountering my father.
Uncle certainly barked loud enough over the last few years about his cruel brother,
the miserable Lord Edmund Wadsworth, who hid his darkness behind his pompous title. I hoped that was the cause of his anxiety.
You have a message from my uncle?
He nodded, throwing glances toward Thomas as he did so, his unease growing.
Yes, Miss Wadsworth, it's something terrible, I'm afraid.
Uncle's servant wrung his hat until I was convinced it had been torn in half.
Do speak freely, Mr. Alberts, I said. What news do you have of my uncle?
He swallowed hard, his Adam's apple a bobbing buoy in his throat.
He's been arrested, miss. Scotland Yard's taken him away, in a Black Maria and everything. Told us he's the one responsible for them deaths in Whitechapel. Said he's gone mad.
He paused, steeling himself against the rest of his news.
A witness come by and identified him. Said he's the one she seen skulking about the murder. Superintendent said they're taking everyone suspicious in on account of how awful them ladies were cut up.
Notes Thomas had begun scribbling slipped through his fingers, the pages fluttering to the ground like ash after a fire.
What kind of nonsense is this?
Albert shook his head, dropping his gaze to the floor, a tremor going through the entire length of his body.
They're rummaging through his laboratory right now, looking for more evidence to keep him locked away. Say it's only a matter of time before he's found guilty and executed. They say he's Leather Apron.
Kane, please fetch my coat.
My attention shifted to Thomas, who was momentarily taken off guard, his mouth hanging wide and his eyes blinking disbelief away. We needed to get to Uncle's laboratory now, before they destroyed his life and all his research.
Alberts, thank you for informing us of this.
Politeness be damned, Wadsworth!
Thomas bellowed, quickly moving across the room and into the hall.
Let's hurry while there's still a laboratory to save. You!
He pointed at the second footman lingering in the hall.
Ready the hansom cab as if your very soul depends on its velocity.
He grabbed my overcoat from Kane, offering to place it round my shoulders, but I yanked it from his grasp. When the second footman hadn't moved, I nodded at him.
Please do as Mr. Cresswell has so rudely demanded.
Thomas snorted as the footman scampered off to do my bidding.
Oh yes, I'm the villain. Your uncle is being hauled off, his scientific findings most likely being destroyed by barbarians, yet I'm the rude one. That makes perfect sense.
You're infuriatingly rude. Being boorish and snapping at people won't get the job done any quicker, you know.
I pulled my coat on and fastened the buttons with deft fingers.
We wouldn't still be waiting here for the carriage if you'd asked them nicely to fetch it.
Any other words of wisdom I should take into consideration, my dove?
He asked flatly.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't kill you to be kinder to people. Who knows? I said, tossing my hands in the air. Maybe you'd finally find someone who could tolerate you. And anyway, how twisted your first concern is of the lab, and not my uncle's life. Your priorities are hopelessly in disarray.
Perhaps I don't want any friends,
he said, moving toward the front door.
Perhaps I am content with speaking the way I do, and care only what your opinion of me is. My first concern is not of your uncle's laboratory. It's of their reason for taking him in.
Thomas rubbed his forehead.
Thus far, they've arrested 4 other men I can think of. For the offense of drinking too much and flashing a knife. My concern is whether they've taken him to a workhouse or to an asylum.
Neither is pleasant.
True, Thomas said, but he's less likely to be dosed with tonic in a workhouse.
In the next moments, our sleek hansom carriage pulled around the front of my house, the single black horse looking dangerous. The beast snorted, sending puffs of steam into the already foggy evening. I hoisted myself into the carriage, not bothering to wait for Thomas or the coachman to help. We needed to hurry. There was no telling how much damage the police were actually doing to Uncle's precious work. And if what Thomas said was true regarding the asylum, I couldn't finish the thought. Thomas hopped into the small enclosure, his attention riveted on the road ahead of us, the muscles in his jaw tense. I couldn't tell if he was worried about Uncle or upset I'd insulted him. Perhaps it was a bit of both. The coachman cracked the whip and we were off, flying through the streets at a gloriously fast pace. We wove in and around larger horse-drawn carriages, moving as agilely as a panther through the urban tangle of London's streets.
In what felt like mere minutes, we were pulling up to Uncle's home in Highgate. I leapt from the cab, my skirts adding bulk and weight to my already heavy footsteps. Police filed in and out of Uncle's home, removing boxes of paperwork. I ran up to a young man who seemed to be in charge. "What is the meaning of this?" I demanded, hoping I might shame them into stopping, if only for a little while. "Have you no respect for a man who's assisted in finding criminals most of his life? What could you possibly want with my uncle?" The constable had the good grace to blush, but stuck his impressive chest out a bit more when Thomas ambled up the steps, an obnoxious swagger in his stride. The constable turned his attention back on me, his light eyes showing a hint of remorse. No salty tears spilled from those oceanic blues, though.
"I'm truly sorry, Miss Wadsworth," he said. "If it were my decision alone, I'd send everyone on their way. Believe me when I say I've got nothing against your uncle."
He smiled shyly, something strangely out of character for a man who had the build and confidence of an Olympian.
"In fact, I've always admired the sort of work he's done. Orders came from high up, though, and I can't ignore them, even if I wanted to."
It was hard to imagine someone who spoke so well choosing the life of a simple policeman. I narrowed my eyes, noticing the extra decorations on his uniform. He was a high-ranking officer then. He was no simple policeman. He was of nobility to hold such an esteemed office at his young age. My gaze travelled back up to his face. The fine bones and sharp angles of his cheeks and square chin made him quite handsome. He was most certainly high-born. Facially, he looked like a younger, more handsome version of Prince Albert Victor, sans moustache. "What did you say your name was?" I asked. Thomas rolled his eyes.
"He didn't, Wadsworth, but you already knew that. Get on with your flirtation so we might get on with our actual purpose for being here."
I glared at Thomas, but the young man paid him no mind.
"I apologize for my rudeness, miss. I'm Superintendent William Blackburn. I'm responsible for the 480 constables here in Highgate."
His name sounded vaguely familiar, but I couldn't quite place where I'd heard it. Perhaps I'd read it in some paper with connection to our murders. Thomas interrupted my muddied thoughts.
"Seems you've employed every last one of them to trample through this home," he muttered, shoving aside an officer before marching in to assess the situation himself.
I wanted to strangle him for being so rude. Superintendent Blackburn might be able to give us answers we'd otherwise not be privy to. For all his superior intelligence, Thomas could be downright obtuse when it came to dealing with people. If I had to befriend the devil in order to help Uncle, so be it. I found myself apologizing. "He's a little high-spirited. Please forgive his impolite behavior. He can be quite..." I trailed off. Thomas Cresswell was not charming to anyone other than me, occasionally, nor was he polite on a good day. Mother would have instructed me to not utter a word when a kind one couldn't be discovered. So that's precisely what I did. Superintendent Blackburn gave me a sheepish grin and offered his arm. I hesitated for only a moment before looping mine through his. "Play nice, Audrey Rose," I reminded myself.
"I'll escort you inside and try my best to explain the reason behind your uncle's arrest."
He paused and looked around before leaning close, an almost familiar scent lingering on his skin.
"I'm afraid it doesn't look very good for him, miss."
Chapter 13 Blueprints and Bloody Bolts. Dr. Jonathan Wadsworth's Laboratory, Highgate, 13 September 1888. Walking into Uncle's basement laboratory with uninvited guests rummaging about like scavengers was its own nightmare, plucking at the ligaments between my bones. Uncle's books, his notes, his journals were all painfully absent. It felt like one of my ribs had been sawed off, leaving me both gasping for breath and missing a piece of myself all at once. Letting go of Blackburn's arm, I slowly turned in place, my eyes two unbelieving orbs in my head. If this was a dream, I hoped to wake from its dreadfulness soon. I had a terrible feeling, however, that this was only the beginning of a series of horrendous nightmares. The specimen jars were the only items that remained untouched, the dull, preserved eyes watching the chaos with silent judgment. Oh, how I wished I could be like those dead, unfeeling things now. Anything would be better than the reality I was standing in. My refuge all these months was destroyed in a few hours by the hands of men who couldn't care less about this sort of work.
Combined with his history of dissection and medical knowledge worked against him,
Superintendent Blackburn was saying, but I couldn't concentrate on his words. Thank heavens Uncle wasn't here. His heart would be sheared in half. I watched helplessly as an officer wrestled a large, gilded tome Uncle had been stroking a few short days ago from the shelf, placing it in a box as if it were a rabid animal ready to snap at him. If only that could happen. He removed a small box Uncle kept in his desk, the lid slipping off. Bolts and screws clattered to the ground, halting the investigation. The officer bent to retrieve the items, a look of shock and disgust as he rose, holding them up for the superintendent to see. The bolts were covered in a rusty crimson that could only be one thing. My own blood ceased to circulate as my eyes met Thomas's startled gaze from across the room. I need to speak with Uncle. I can explain. Someone placed a chair next to me and I plopped into it straight away. It was as if the oxygen had been suctioned from the laboratory with a new steam-powered device I'd seen advertised across London. What was Uncle thinking? Stealing evidence? Those bolts were from the murder scenes and belonged to Scotland Yard. Uncle had inadvertently placed himself as the main suspect, and I had no idea how to assist him, or who to even turn to for help. Father, though he had the right connections, would rather see his brother hang than assist him in any way. Nathaniel, though he'd want to help if only for my sake, most likely wouldn't do anything to anger Father, or cause an even greater scandal that was bound to fall upon the Wadsworth name. Especially something of this magnitude, sure to hit the papers once reporters caught its scent. Undoubtedly, Aunt Amelia would throw lavish parties and attend daily services, hoping to distract people from her association with her disgraced brother. Then there was Grandmama. She had no ties to Father's side of the family, therefore wouldn't feel obligated to get involved. Not out of maliciousness, but out of a strong dislike for Wadsworth men in general. Grandmama openly blamed Father for Mother's illness, and made it very clear that, if a Wadsworth were looking out at a crowd, ready to swing for their crimes, I'd be front and centre, watching and cheering, before handing out homemade Bundi Ladoo treats to everyone in attendance. Each time we sent correspondence, she searched for excuses to have my bags packed and passage paid to visit her in New York. This would be perfect. There was no way I'd leave London now.
Ransack the laboratory if you must, Blackburn said to an officer. Just do it carefully.
That snapped me from my reverie. I glared at the superintendent, only partially aware of Thomas throwing a fit over one journal in particular, his.
You must be mad! I won't hand over my property!
Superintendent Blackburn knelt in front of me, his look no longer light. I stared at the pale strands of his hair. Unlike my brother's careful cut, his hair was too wild to be tamed, curling about his temple like serpents. How fitting for such a cold-blooded monster.
I know it's a lot to absorb at once, Miss Wadsworth, but I'm terribly afraid there's more.
He motioned for the officer fighting with Thomas to give up the one journal, since Thomas had brought it into the house with us, and it hadn't been part of their inquest.
We've got witnesses who've stepped forth, placing someone fitting your uncle's description at the scene of the last two crimes.
My attention finally jolted back to reality. I stared at Superintendent Blackburn as if he were the mad one. Oh, really? Exactly how many men in London fit my uncle's description? I asked. I can count at least 10 off the top of my head, one of them being the Queen's grandson, Prince Albert Victor Edward. What, will you say the Duke of Clarence and Avondale is involved in these murders next? I'm sure the Queen would love that. As a matter of fact, I squinted at him. You look as if you could be the Duke's younger brother yourself. Might you be involved? Superintendent Blackburn cringed at my inappropriate criticism of his inquest involving the second in line to the throne and himself. I took a deep breath, trying for calmness. I'd be of no use to anyone if I too